Welcome back. This is Las Mata Maridos, and you are listening to episode 6. Word had gotten out fast around the town about the hijackings as well as the murders. The two families were blaming each other, and no one gave a second thought to the possibility of an outside party. That being the case, Luz and Cielo discovered it was increasingly simple to now continue on their murderous spree as long as the real motive for revenge was never revealed. With the growing success of the club and the fruitful endeavor of the hijackings, the three were becoming very wealthy. Though it didn't come without its share of drawbacks. El Oscurito was situated at the exact spot the Milagrosa had been. So it saw the same volume of people coming through, only for the club, it wasn't Sunday souls seeking salvation. It was Friday freaks and Saturday sinners spelling out popularity and fame to the little establishment. It soon caught the eye of both the Sanabrias and the Montoyas, who believed that any source of revenue from any business in that area was rightfully theirs to take or to shake down. The first attempt had been made on a night the women had gone into town to partake in their routine vigilante justice. No one but Filemon was at the club. He always waited till sunrise to pick up the women, knowing that the townspeople by that time were either asleep or drunk and barely getting home after a long night out to notice any outside activity. Treating himself to a tequila in the peace and quiet of the night, he suddenly heard rustling outside. He went behind the bar, up the hidden staircase that led to the roof where he could see what was going on. It was a small band of Montoyas attempting to gain entry. Filemon quickly raced back downstairs, grabbing the gun from under the bar, and waited for the door to open. Hearing the clank of the deadbolt being broken, he waited till the men took a step further inside the club and shot the first thing that came through. The loud bang of the gun startled the others, who weren't expecting anyone to be there, and began immediately firing back. From his vantage point, Filemon had a clear shot at the intruders, save the last one, who caught him off guard and managed to shoot him. The speed and the intense heat of the bullet went through the left side of his face, dropping him to the ground, not before managing to shoot the last one in the head as he too fell. Promptly, he passed out in the process. His last thoughts before losing consciousness was of the duo. When Luz and Cielo realized that their longtime friend and confidant wasn't at the meeting spot, they hurried back to the club and found the carnage all over the floor, and Filemon passed out face down in a small pool of his own blood. Quickly, they lifted him up and carried him through the secret passageway behind one of the stalls in the women's restroom. They entered one of the rooms there and put him down on one of the beds and made him as comfortable as possible before returning to the dead bodies on the main floor. Luz stayed behind to clean up the mess and tend to Filemon, while Cielo drove out east for a whole day and night, deeper and deeper into the desert, to bury the bodies of the men, but not before removing the wedding rings of the married ones, as had been their ritual. When she made it back to the club, she saw that Luz had done an incredible job of wiping everything clean. The floors were no longer decorated, with stains of rust red laid out sporadically across the floor. Any broken or damaged furniture had been repaired or replaced, and when she went up to go see Filemon, he was conscious and alert. Looking at his face, she examined the wound. The left side was still covered with gauze from chin to forehead. Luz had explained to her that a good portion of the skin had been very badly damaged from the gunshot wound, and it would leave what would appear to be a shallow hole on the side of his face for the rest of his life. Cielo asked Filemon how he felt.
"How do you think? Parezco calavera, cabrona,"
in sharp, angry tones, he replied. In an attempt to alleviate his tension, she came back with,
"Pues entonces we'll start calling you Don Calacas, güey, pa' que te quejas."
With a snappy comeback at the tip of his tongue, he paused. "Don Calacas. I like it," he said. "It does have a nice ring to it," Luz agreed. Chuckling, Filemón added, Don Calacas y las matamaridos.
They stepped back to give him a puzzled look. He further explained as he pulled out a cigar box from the nightstand next to him and jiggled the contents inside. It's quite a collection of rings you have here, viejas. Filemón had had a lot of time to think about their situation while he was recovering. He was certain that the anonymity Luz and Cielo had at that moment would only last so long if they remained in Arena Oscura. Eventually they would be found out and then lose their advantage over their families. He'd been spinning his wheels trying to figure out a way to keep them ahead of the game. The only thing he could think of was to have the duo come out on their own terms. They would also have zero ties with the club. They could not at all be seen as proprietors. The place would be burned down every other week, judging from the rate Luz and Cielo were going. As he explained this to the women, no emotion played on their face. They listened and interjected when necessary. When all was said and done, the three of them were in agreement as to what their next course of action would be. Since the night of the shooting at the club, rumors flew around Arena Oscura about the owner having been killed in a gun battle. Knowing that the Montoyas and the Sanabrias would be on the heels of this news to claim it, they decided to hire a front man. Don Calacas, as Filemón would now permanently be known as, would move out west and set up a base. He would make a name for himself out there, investing time, talent, and money in developing a network of men and women, made up of both saints and sinners alike from all around and every social circle. From the rich and the powerful, to the meager and the desperate, to reach well past his grasp and acquire a following while maintaining ties and communication with Luz and Cielo. The job would be his to find a patsy to send out to the town and run El Oscurito, knowing full well that the turnaround rate on managers could be very constant. This gave Luz and Cielo the ability to go on with their plan, and each night, the borrachas would go in from town to town, planting seeds of gossip in the ears of drunkards about las matamaridos. The pair's infamy grew and fear of them escalated. While they managed to cut down a good number of Sanabrias and Montoyas, more would naturally spawn in their place. In time, the women branched out, giving their special brand of aid to other women who sought them out, adding to their growing collection of wedding bands along the way. Luz and Cielo embraced their alter egos, and in time, they stopped mourning the deaths of the Madres Milagrosas they had aspired to be as young girls, and readily stepped into their roles as las matamaridos, now as women. Luz, Cielo, and Don Calacas went their separate ways that day, confident and clear on what their role in their destiny was to be. Each year that went by that they lived granted each a place among the night sky of Arena Oscura, making the obscure myth of the Matamaridos a living legend. To this day, El Oscurito still stands, as grand and as opulent as it has ever been, a thorn in the side of two feuding families, a symbol of power that neither can have but both hunger for. And as predicted, every year or so, give or take a few months, Don Calacas is still counted on to send a new face to replace the one of the deceased. Rumor has it, though, loud whispers on the drunken tequila breaths of patrons in cantinas all around the area of Arena Oscura is that El Oscurito is about to have its first female manager. It is further inferred that both families are under the assumption that she is one half of the murderous duo, and they plan to dispatch of her in the same fashion as all the rest and settle over the ownership of El Oscurito once and for all. The winds of time are shifting. The hour may finally be upon the Montoyas and the Sanabrias. The woman approaching the town has the guidance and the blessing of Don Calacas, as well as the full support of the Matamaridos, and the feuding families aren't at all prepared for what's in store for them next. Arena Oscura is still a lawless town with no government or policy, only cartels. The Sanabrias and the Montoyas are still the largest and most powerful families there.
But if you happen to wander into a cantina at 3 o'clock in the morning, look around the place. See if you spot an empty table with a full bottle of tequila and have yourself a seat. You'll find yourself in the company of men willing to give out secrets just for a shot of that bottle. And eventually, they'll tell you about the matamaridos. They'll say, "Las matamaridos van a llegar y con tu alma se desquitarán. A cuchillazos te torturarán y a balazos te matarán. Pero más nunca las pueden ver porque el Satanás las sabe esconder." Thank you for listening to episode 6. We are at the conclusion of the first part of the story of Las Matamaridos. There is more to come. This isn't the end, but this is the end for now. This is how they got started. This is where they came from. I hope you have enjoyed listening to this tale as much as I've enjoyed saying it. There are more stories. Don Calacas has to have his own as well. We need to see what happens to him when he moves out west and how it is that he becomes so powerful and how he still continues to help his friends. We'll also have a few side characters along the way who'll get their own stories as well. And the women may pop in and out just to see how they're doing. I hope you come back. My name is Arlene Sanabria, and I have been your narrator. Thank you.